哒啦哒哒哒哒啦啦，哒啦哒哒哒哒啦啦，哒啦哒哒哒哒啦啦。
Hello and welcome. I'm Helen.
And I'm Caroline.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
This week we are chatting with Michelle Brown Calistro from Matchpoint Fabric about sustainable sewing. We cover how you can make a positive, sustainable impact in your making practice, how Matchpoint Fabric came to be, and hear stories from the deadstock warehouses of New York City.
Yeah, we do. Like a detective.
Yeah.
Where is the fabric?
Knock, 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 knock. Bang, 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 bang. Let me in. I'm here for the fabric. This episode is sponsored by Chalk and Notch. Chalk and Notch makes professionally drafted patterns so you can create a custom handmade wardrobe.
Chalk and Notch is releasing a new pattern, the Crew Shorts and Trousers. This pattern is on sale from October 8th to 15th. No coupon code needed.
Love to Sew listeners can receive 15% off any regular price pattern in the shop. Go to chalkandnotch.com and use the code Love to Sew. That's chalkandnotch.com with the code Love to Sew. And now, on to the show.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Hi, guys. So excited to be here.
We can't wait to chat with you. Can you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yes, of course. My name is Michelle Brown Calistro for the full shebang. I am a sewist, a writer, and I own a fabric store called Matchpoint Fabric.
And where are you from?
So I'm originally from Victoria, BC, and I lived there until I was in my mid-20s. And then I moved to Toronto, where I've been ever since.
Awesome. A fellow Canadian. We love that.
Yay. It is like summer again up here.
Oh, yeah. I was just in Montreal last week and it was so hot.
It's hot.
And I was really jealous because it's like rainy season here already.
I know. I packed away all my summer clothes.
So we want to hear about your sewing journey. Tell us about how and when you learned to sew. How did you get into it?
So I was taught how to sew by my grandma and my mom. So they are both under 5 feet tall. So sewing was a bit of a necessity for them. My grandma is so stylish, and growing up kind of World War II era, there wasn't a lot of money or resources to go around, so she really learned the art of tailoring at a young age, and she still tailors all of her clothes to this day, and she is of a certain age that she would kill me if I said on a podcast, but it's very impressive, so that was passed on through my mom and then to me. Yeah, so I learned to sew like in school, as a lot of people did in home ec, you know, the whole PJ pant thing and the apron. And I used to kind of mash up my clothes a bit and like remake them when I was a punk kid, when I was like 16 or so. I made some truly horrendous things, as I'm sure many young sewists have. And then I put it away for like a really long time until 5 years ago.
I think that's a pretty common sewing journey. You put it away for some time and then you come back to it when you're ready.
Yeah, I went back to Victoria for Christmas and my mom was like, just take your sewing machine home to Toronto. So I was like, oh, fine, mom. So I carted it on as like a carry-on. And I was like, oh, I have some curtains I need to hem. And that's it. And then I'll just sell it on Kijiji or whatever. And then I found out about seamwork patterns. And I was like, what is this? This is amazing. I can sew whatever I want. And then obviously I got hooked. So
that's awesome. It's crazy to think that it could have gone another way. Like, what if you had sold your sewing machine on Kijiji? Oh my gosh.
I know. It was really, to be honest, it was very close. Because so another rookie mistake, I just like didn't really understand sizing. So I'm fairly petite and I was like, I'll just sew a small size. So I was like, I'll sew a size 2. So I didn't check the measurement chart and I just cut it out and sewed it. And I had to cut myself out of the shirt with scissors down the middle. So it was truly a failure. And I learned very quickly to always measure every time. Check your measurements.
You have to make mistakes when you start sewing. That's how we learn these things.
Yeah.
How we learn. Exactly. We all start somewhere.
So we really want to chat with you today about sustainability and sewing and your fabric store and everything else you have going on. But before we get to that, we wanted to ask you about your writing because you are a poet, right?
That's true. I am.
So how did you get into writing poetry?
So that was kind of my first love. It's what I have my degree in. So I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts in poetry. And it's just always been a love of mine. So my first book came out last year. It's called Safe Words, little plug if anyone happens to be into sewing and poetry. I'm sure there are some of you out there. So it's cool. It's definitely, it's like my main sustaining hobby that keeps me going, and it's definitely a passion of mine. So yeah.
Is there a particular subject matter that you write poetry about?
I write a lot about my life. that's not a great answer, but I really I like to kind of inject a lot of surrealism and magical realism in my writing. So I don't know, for lack of a better way to describe it, it's kind of like daily life stuff with a bit of magic thrown in.
That sounds awesome.
That sounds really
sounds kind of like sewing.
And if our listeners want to check out your work, you've mentioned your book, Safe Words. Do you have a website as well for your poetry?
Yeah. It's michelle-brown.ca. And there you can find out. I do a lot of kind of tours. I was recently in Halifax reading at Words on the Street, but I list all my kind of upcoming events there.
Very
so
cool.
I always like meeting up with sewists when I do these little tours. So if anyone ever wants to meet up, I'm so down.
That is awesome. We are kind of on the cusp of Slow Fashion October, and we really wanted to focus on talking about sustainability with you today because you focus so much on that in your store and in your sewing practice. So can you chat with us a little bit about your journey to becoming more sustainable?
Of course. So as it relates specifically to sewing, I think it was quite a gradual journey for me. As many sewists do when they first start, I was really worried about sewing with anything too expensive because I wasn't sure like how it was going to turn out. So, and I wasn't really educated on kind of the dirty textiles that kind of populate a lot of fabric stores. So I was honestly just sewing with whatever I could get my hands on. And I think this wasn't great for the environment, but also the clothes were just falling apart and they weren't fun to wear either. So, and at first it was more about a selfish thing for me. I was like, how can I get my hands on better quality textiles just for wear and feel? And then coincidentally, I watched the True Cost documentary when it was on Netflix. I'm not sure if it still is anymore, but that's kind of about the just essentially the true cost of the fast fashion and textile industry. And then after that, I read a book called Overdressed by Elizabeth Klein, which I highly recommend. And then kind of from there was just like no going back. And I just fell into this rabbit hole of learning as much as I could about sustainable textiles. And that's kind of how it started. And I was also raised by two hippies in Victoria. So I've always kind of had a bit of sustainability ethos, just kind of in my spirit, so to speak. So it made sense to kind of apply that to textiles as well and learn as much as I could.
And then you also went on to apply that to your business as well when you started Matchpoint.
Yeah, that was also kind of interesting how it all sort of dovetailed together because I had kind of always wanted to start my own business and I knew it would be sustainable, whatever it was. And then it kind of dovetailed with this new knowledge of dead stock and sustainable textiles. So it was kind of happenstance how it all worked out.
And since you started your journey by seeing that documentary and reading that book and getting more into slow fashion, how has your mindset kind of shifted over the years when it comes to sustainable making and also sustainable living? Where are you at now?
So I think I'm kind of where a lot of people are, where we're all sort of trying to do our best. I think sustainable living and trying to live sustainably can be wrapped up in a lot of confusion and almost like shame for some people because we're all trying to do our best, but we're all, of course, limited by economic reasons and access reasons. So I know that some people just can get so frustrated that they sort of lose the plot and just give it all up completely. So my goal on my public platform and through the business is always to kind of like empower people to just do what they can. And that's kind of where I am too. So fabric wise, I've set myself a little personal challenge to only sew with sustainable fabrics going forward. For me, that means sewing my stash first, which is coincidentally filled with non-sustainable fabrics from my old fabric hoarding days. So sewing with those first, and then just trying to, yeah, do what I can. And I also try to apply that to other parts of my life as well. I'm doing this new thing where I won't let myself get a coffee unless I bring my travel mug, which is like that forces me to bring my travel mug everywhere because I need coffee, you know? Yeah, I do little hacks like that to just force myself because, you know, we're all busy. We're all trying to do our best, so.
Yeah, I saw a meme somewhere recently that really like resonated with me, and it was like, we don't need like a small percentage of people to be like perfect, zero waste, sustainable.
Yeah.
We need a large percentage of people to just like do their best, like get 50% there, you know? And I think that is really important to remember when you're looking down that rabbit hole of all the things that we should be doing to try to be more, you know, low waste and sustainable in life, not just in sewing, and just think like, what are the things that I can do now? Those little things, that it all really does add up and make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 1000%. Yeah.
I'm curious if you have any recommendations for our listeners who maybe would be interested in taking a more sustainable approach in their sewing, if you have maybe any specific resources to recommend that have really helped you along your journey.
So something I started doing that has totally changed the way I deal with scraps, because I don't have any storage space in my apartment, and the storage space I do have was given over to Matchpoint. So I really have no room for fabric. So my biggest thing is to cut out, if you cut out your scrap projects right away. So if you're like, oh, I'm going to use this extra yard I have for a willow tank, like cut that out immediately that day when you're still at the sewing machine and put it by your sewing machine, and then you're actually going to sew it. Because I just find that if you leave it in your stash, it never gets sewn and you just forget about it. So that's a good way to kind of keep your scraps cycling through.
That's a really good one. I like to do that with my bias tape, because I found if I just set my cotton scraps aside thinking I'll make bias tape out of that, it never happens. But yeah, if I at least cut the strips,
exactly,
then I'm ready to go when the time comes.
Yeah.
Is there something that you've seen happening in the community that you're like, oh, if we just did it this way, it would be so much more sustainable or so much better for the environment?
Oh, yes. This is huge, and I can't believe that more people aren't doing this, is just like have fabric swaps, especially if you have IRL friends who sew. It's kind of just the same idea as a clothing swap, but with fabric.
That's a brilliant idea. We did that once in Vancouver and it went super well. Yeah. Everyone was so excited, and we had like some stipulations where you had to bring, you know, certain yardage, and you know, you can come up with a system that's like take one, leave one kind of thing if you want. But it went over really well because we all just like something new. And we all, I think, have the habit of buying things. And then a couple of years later, if you haven't sewn with them, all of a sudden they're not really your style anymore. And it's great to pass those on to somebody who's actually going to appreciate them.
Exactly. And I think it's great to give it to thrift stores if you don't need your fabric, but you don't really know if that's going to end up in the hands of like a loving sewist who will create a garment with care. And I think fabric swaps are a great way to ensure that. So we're hosting our first one on Saturday. And I'm so excited. I'm really trying to not leave with more than I come with, because that's my whole thing, is trying to cut down on the stash. But we'll see.
That's awesome. And when you say we, you mean, because you're part of like the Toronto area socialist kind of group, right?
Yeah, Matchpoint is sponsoring it, but it's kind of like whoever wants to come, and it's been promoted through Toronto Socialist too. So,
oh, that's also, it's Matchpoint that's sponsoring. That's awesome. That's so great.
Yeah.
That is such a good point, that like it is such an accessible way for people to kind of get new fabrics and not have to spend money, not have to buy, you know, virgin goods, and kind of reuse something that maybe someone else doesn't love. And I also loved your tip about scrap busting. I'm curious if you have any other thoughts on projects or ideas for scrap busting.
Oh, yeah. So Of course, I love a good boxy tank. You can, I mean, depending on size, you can usually get it out of a meter, meter and a half. So those are great. I also patchwork right away. So I've made a couple like patchwork tanks. So if I have scraps, I'll just cut them all into little squares and kind of sew those into a large tapestry. And then I just place the pattern pieces on top of that. And that creates kind of the base of the bodice or whatever.
That's an awesome idea. Love that.
And yeah, other scrappy tips. I love making produce bags too. They're especially great if you have linen scraps or just like basic muslin cotton scraps or even quilting cotton, because that kind of can continue your sustainability in other ways, especially when you're at the grocery store. And makeup wipes, if you just cut out a bunch of circles and you can chain serge them. So they're actually quite easy to do. You just serge around the edges and in like a long chain of circles, if that makes sense. And then you have makeup wipes forever.
That's very cool. So the grocery bags, you're talking about like for vegetables, like in your fridge, right?
Yeah, either in your fridge. And if you get them damp, actually, before you put like spinach in them, it'll help keep it fresh for longer. And also just you can take them to bulk stores. So if you go to like Bulk Barn, you can just take cloth bags and then you can decant them into glass once you get home.
Ooh, smart. Super smart. Mm-hmm. So I feel like sustainable sewing is often associated with the idea of slowing down and being very intentional with your making. And I kind of want to know if you ever do speedy sewing where you cut out a bunch of projects at once or you go on a bit of a making spree and you make a bunch of things. Like, is there room in the sustainable making world for speedy sewing? Because that's what I like to do.
Me too. Me three, guys, to be honest. We all three of us own businesses, and I'm sure you can agree that there is not really like a lot of time for personal projects, let's say. So speedy sewing is truly the only way that I sew. But in order to ensure that it's something that I'm actually going to wear, I do a lot of advanced planning. Helen, I am also a Trello fan, so I too have many sewing related boards that I overplan my wardrobe on. So that's kind of, I do a lot of pre-planning and I break out all the steps in my Trello board so that I can just pull them into my daily to-dos. So it's like today I'm just going to cut it out. And that's kind of how I fit it in. And honestly, a lot of the stuff I sew doesn't take more than, if I was sitting down all at once, it wouldn't take more than a couple hours.
That's good. I feel better. As long as I don't have to hand sew everything to be part of the sustainable sewing movement I'm in.
No, of course not. Batch sewing forever.
So what are some of the important sustainability issues that the textile industry is currently dealing with, facing? What are some of the things that are going on that our listeners might want to know about?
Yeah. So caveat that there is a ton of information on this, and this is really only scratching the surface. So I really encourage anyone who's listening to go and do your own research, because I really believe this, that like us sewists, we're not causing the textile crisis. Like, we're not causing the majority of this pollution. We're such a small number, but we do love fabric the most out of pretty much anyone on this planet. So I think we are in a unique position to really be crusaders for this. So like, I don't want to feel anyone to feel guilty if they still love, you know, their satin polyester chiffon. I love it too. Love me some viscose. But just arming yourself with this knowledge, and then you can even kind of talk to your friends about it who may still be into fast fashion. That's really what I think is the most important of all. Overall, it's pretty grim. Like, the textile industry is the second most polluting industry out there. So we have a long ways to go. But I think like everyone kind of understands that polyester is quite bad for the environment and not great for the oceans. Beyond that, there are a lot of kind of ways that textiles are produced and harvested and grown and milled that end up being very taxing on the environment as well.
Right. Yeah. A lot of water use and fabric waste and chemicals and things like that being used. And that's the tip of the iceberg, really, because mm-hmm. then there's also the treatment of the people that are actually working to produce those textiles.
Exactly. And I think there's like sustainability only goes so far. You also have to talk about the ethics and also land use. And especially in so many of these countries are struggling to begin with. And then we're just heaping this kind of like textile waste on them, and they're having to learn how to deal with the runoffs and stuff. So it kind of puts a huge burden on the supply chain.
So was learning about this sort of darker side of the textile industry the reason why you decided to start a fabric company that was more focused on sustainable fabrics?
It was sort of the catalyst, I would say. And it was certainly the catalyst to why I decided to have quite strict parameters on what fabrics I would bring in. I kind of knew I wanted to start a fabric store, but I just wasn't quite sure how to go about it. So I think, yeah, it was a catalyst for sure.
So when, during your kind of making, sewing, slow fashion, sustainability journey, did you make that decision to make a difference in this industry by creating Matchpoint Fabric? Like, what was that moment when you decided to do it?
Oh man, that's a really good question. I don't know. I can't trace it back to an exact moment. It was kind of, it had been building for a while, and I started looking at my stash. And I think it was also, I was coming into a lot of greenwashing, mainly by larger brands who were saying things like, you know, this line is made with natural fibers, but those natural fibers include bamboo viscose, which when it's produced, carbon disulfide is created as runoff. And that is incredibly damaging to the surrounding towns and waterways. Or cotton, which is, you know, incredibly pesticide heavy and is like one of the most proliferative, is that a word? Yes, proliferative crops that is non-food. And so it just requires a ton of water and a ton of pesticides. So I was just kind of getting frustrated with some non-information out there. And I was thinking, even if I have a small customer base and I'm able to kind of teach them just something and they're able to share with their friends or think slightly differently about how they purchase goods, that was kind of my raison d'etre for opening the store. And that's really what gave me the push to do it.
And I kind of want to hear like the behind the scenes of like how that process went for you of setting up an online store and, you know, actually launching it to the community and kind of getting everything in place that you needed to make that happen.
I was actually listening to, I think it was your 100th episode where you interviewed each other, and it was making me so happy. And because I think launching a business was very much the same for me too, where you just kind of, you're pushed out of the nest, so to speak, and you just make do with what you have. And you don't, I didn't know really much about owning a business or taxes or packing orders, like you mentioned, Caroline. So yeah, it was definitely, I launched with 10 fabrics. I remember it. I said, I'm going to open my store when I have 10 fabrics up. And I only had 8 and I had no more money. And my friend, who is an absolute angel, she was a fashion designer, and she had all of this overstock that she was just going to get rid of. And she said, I'm going to give it to you so you can start. So she gave me the last 2 rolls, and then I had 10. So
amazing. And how was Matchpoint received by the community initially? Like, how did that launch go for you?
It was great. I mean, you two know and are such amazing champions of the sewing community. It's just like really the nicest group of people out there and so supportive. And I honestly, like, some of those early orders, they probably would have been like, what are you doing? I like didn't know how to pack orders. I wrapped them in like basically like heavy craft paper with like, it was so bad. But people were so nice and gave me such great suggestions. And I have quite a few customers who really stuck with me right from those very shaky first days. And honestly, the best part and the most rewarding part has been when people write in to say, like, I didn't know this about this certain fabric, or I've told my friends, or when they tag their friends in the comments, like to say, I didn't know this about viscose, or I didn't know this about cotton, check it out. And that's like the most rewarding by far.
Yeah, I feel like it has to be an interesting position to be in where you are selling goods, but you're also educating people about those goods. And of course, you're selling stuff that you're giving it a new life. So you're, you know, reusing it in a way, but you're also encouraging people to buy stuff. Like, how do you feel about bridging that?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question. And it's something that I really struggle with, because when you're a small business owner, you have to kind of be like, buy my stuff so I can eat. But also, I really want to be like, don't buy stuff because you don't need it, maybe. And also, maybe there are other ways you can get it. Like, maybe there's a fabric swap, or maybe you can check out your local secondhand store. So I really do view my role as owner of Matchpoint, like, twofold. So I want to source amazing fabrics that are there for you if and when you need them or want them. But also, I do want to educate people almost separate from the store and just share what I've learned, because this really has become like a passion project for me, and learning about sustainable textiles goes so deep, and there's so much we can do. So
I think in an ideal world, people do both things. They're buying from you to support you in your small business, but then they're also learning from you and then make use of some of the scraps that they have because of something that they've learned from you. And both of those things can be a positive.
Mm-hmm. I really also want to encourage our listeners to go and check out your Instagram account for Matchpoint Fabric, because you do some really great posts where you are educating the community and kind of bringing some information forward where people can kind of read about it and do with it what they will. And you encourage people to do their own research too. So I really love how you sort of balance both the selling of the fabric, but also just, it's so clear that you care so much about sustainability and about the textile industry and just trying to make the world a better place. So that really does come through. And I hope our listeners go check that out.
Thank you. And I do have to like thank Caroline. You were like so instrumental in starting to bring sustainable textiles into Canada through Blackbird. Just all of the selection you've brought in over the years has been so amazing. So
oh, thank you.
Thank you.
I did want to ask you a question that it's a little bit of a curveball. I don't think we had this in our notes for you, but it sort of came to mind for me, because I felt like throughout my journey of like being a business owner, especially with a fabric store where so much of like the work that goes into owning a fabric store is like manual labor. Like, yeah. You know, the fabric store doesn't operate if you're not shipping out orders. And I wonder if you have moments and throughout your journey where people in your life have really like rallied to make your dream or help you to make your dream a reality. And I wonder if you have any stories that you'd want to share about that, of like people that have really helped you along the way.
Oh my God. Like, how long is this podcast? Because this will be a 6-hour podcast. So I tried to teach my husband, Vincent, how to cut orders, because I was like, you know, if I ever get in an accident or something and I lose my hands, you're going to need to cut these orders for me. And he tried, bless his heart, but he doesn't quite have the gift, I don't think. So instead, he has just been so supportive. We have like, our apartment is set up in this weird but great way where we have this kind of like outdoor warehouse attached to it. It's kind of like a covered large porch that I've used as just my Matchpoint HQ. And that used to have his stuff in it. So he's given that up, and he graciously, I might add, and he has cooked me dinner pretty much every night since I launched, and he's the best. My mom flew out to Toronto when we were in Japan and ran the store for me. This is a retired school teacher who does not know the last thing or the first thing about e-commerce, but I'm pretty sure I came back and my customers were like, can you send Carol back? Because her notes were so cute. Aww, they were like, her sweet notes that she was writing to people were like, hello, this is Michelle's mom. I love this piece of fabric. It reminds me of this dress I used to have. I'm going to buy some for myself. Love, Michelle. Oh. It was the best.
Cutest thing ever.
Yeah, I call her the Matchpoint mom, and she always buys and makes amazing things, actually, from the fabric. So you can check out the Instagram to see some of her latest looks.
Oh, we definitely will. We'll link it in the show notes too. But speaking of the name Matchpoint, I also wanted to hear the origin behind the name of your store.
Yeah, so the name. I just like the word, first of all. I think it sounded really fun and catchy, but also it's because when you get dudstock fabric sometimes, a lot of the time I'll get the exact content from my supplier, but sometimes if you find a really great piece, you just don't know the content. So you would do what's called a burn test. And I'm sure a lot of you sewists know this already, but you just kind of cut off a little bit of fabric, light it on fire, and then depending on how it burns or melts, you'll be able to guess within relative certainty what the content of the fabric is. So that's kind of really what inspired the name. It's like the match that lights the fabric for a burn test.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome. I can see that now when I look at your logo too. It's got like a match vibe to it.
Oh yeah, it's a match. Thanks. I'm glad you picked that up.
That's awesome. So let's talk about the deadstock fabrics, because I'm sure not all of our listeners know what that is or where it comes from or anything. So why don't you give us a little introduction to deadstock?
Okay. So deadstock, and depending on where you are in the world, sometimes it's referred to as offcuts or overstock, sometimes promotional. It has a lot of different names. But essentially, it's fabric that was produced for some reason or another, but was not used. So a lot of the time what that means is a fashion designer or a mill overproduced it for some reason. And generally it's just sitting in a warehouse. So a lot of times people think like, oh, deadstock is saved from the landfill. Usually it's just saved from like a dark warehouse. I'm not like stopping garbage trucks like, give me your fabric. But I think eventually the idea is that it would have ended up in a landfill. So it kind of has the same ethos as buying vintage. It's like buying stuff, buying fabric that is already in production. So you're not using any virgin materials and you're not creating net new products, essentially.
Right. And do you only stock deadstock or do you also sometimes have virgin goods?
Yeah. So we stock, I would say it's about 50-50. We stock dead stock, but also we do stock virgin materials. The virgin materials we stock, we choose them based on a rating system, which is by a charity called Made By, and they created what's called the environmental benchmark for fibers. So any new virgin materials we bring in rate as a C or higher on their scale. And they rank for 6 parameters. So that's like how fabric is on gas emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, human toxicity, ecotoxicity, energy, water, and land. It's a little outdated now. I think it's a couple years old, but it's still the best out there. And you can even print it out and take it in your wallet. It's like a nice little chart. And it ranks, there's like A grade, B grade, C grade, and D grade, and on and on.
That's right.
Awesome.
Cool. Yeah. So where do you find these deep, dark, dank warehouses?
Down very scary alleys in New York City.
Yeah, that's what I'm imagining. Creeping around with a flashlight in the dark.
Like. Basically. Sometimes it's a little daunting. Like, it's definitely like when I first started, I had no idea how to find it. So we have a couple warehouses in Toronto, which let me kind of dip my toes in. And on my first buying trip to New York, I literally was just like walking up and down the fashion garment district, like banging on doors. Now, luckily, I've built a few relationships where I don't have to do that anymore. No flashlight needed. They'll just send me samples. Thank God. It started out as a lot of pavement pounding. And now I luckily have some amazing partners who are called jobbers. So these jobbers, they're the ones who buy these giant lots. Some of them are closeout lots. So they just buy everything that a mill cannot sell. And then they store it in their warehouses and then they sell it to kind of medium wholesalers like me.
Gotcha. Very cool. So can you tell us about maybe a time when you went to like a very unexpected location to find fabric, or like what's the weirdest fabric sourcing experience you've had?
There was this one source that I found in New York, and it was like my first trip, and I genuinely walked in. I thought no one had worked there in like 70 years. It was literally staffed by ghosts. Like there were no lights, no one there. So I just kind of wandered up and down the aisles, and I hear this little gentleman, very sweet, very old, say, "Hello." And he turned out to be lovely. And we now have a great relationship. But I really thought I was going to have to call the police or find some other way out of there for a while.
Did you do this alone? Like when you went to New York for the first time and like knocked on doors, were you like all by your lonesome? Did you have a partner in crime?
No, I'm worried about you. I was all by myself. Don't do what I did, kids. Not advisable. No, I was all by myself. I was there actually for my New York poetry launch of my book. And I launched my book in the same month that I launched my business. Probably also not advisable, but life happens. So I was just down there anyways. And I was like, you know, you talk yourself up. You're like, I'm going to do it. So it all worked out okay, luckily.
You're brave. I don't think I could do that. Even just calling like the doctor to make an appointment, I get nervous.
I know.
I feel like going into uncharted territory.
It's really scary. I know. Yeah, I have like it's very scary. I have a persona, like cool downtown Michelle who just like has unlimited confidence and can do these sorts of things.
Well, I also do want to acknowledge, like, it's one thing to, like, knock on a door, but it's another thing to actually navigate through one of these places and find the gems, because I've been to Jobbers and it's so overwhelming. Like, there is so much fabric. There are times when you might be worried that you're going to get buried in fabric because a rack is just going to fall on you. Like, it's just floor to ceiling, like, so much. And you do have such a wonderful selection in your store, and you have
Thank
this
you.
Gift for spotting, you know, the gems. And I wonder if you have like a favorite, I know it's probably like choosing a favorite child, but do you have a favorite dead stock fabric that you found, like something that comes to mind that was like your favorite ever?
Oh man. I mean, I think I do. I haven't launched it yet, but it's coming for winter. I know. I'm really excited. Let's just say it's by a certain designer that starts with a C and ends with an L. Chanel.
We're both sitting here with very confused
like
expressions on our faces.
We'll get there.
Oh, I got it. Me too. Got it.
That's exciting. Cool.
It's exciting, and I found it, and my supplier, the jobber, I think he saw my face light up. And I think he was thinking about raising the price he had told me because of how excited I was. But yeah, it's a boiled wool, and it is very nice. So I'm excited. Hopefully it makes it to the store and I don't just buy it all myself, because that's always a problem.
So what can our listeners expect if they were to shop in your store? What kind of stuff do you carry?
So I try to keep an eye to the current trend, so to speak. I like to stock what I want to sew with. So it's a lot of, I would say my dead stock sourcing tends to be the more fun pieces. So that's like the really cool prints. I have such a cool rayon linen in right now that's this like sketched leaves, kind of brown. I've never seen anything like it. And it's such a unique kind of drape too. So yeah, I think dead stock wise, I try to bring in some more fun kind of capsule collections centered around a certain theme or a certain print or a certain textile. And then for the sustainable pieces I bring in, the sustainable reorderables, I should say, I try to keep those like pretty basic. So this season I am bringing in just like a lot of olive. I'm worried that the whole store is going to be olive soon. Like, I'm just obsessed.
I mean, it's fine. So. Everybody loves olive, right?
Right? It's one of those kind of universal colors, I feel like. It's just looks great on everyone.
It's become a neutral. And do you have a personal favorite fabric that you like working with the most?
I personally love a good lyocell, Tencel. So I don't know if people know this, but Tencel is just like the branded lyocell. So it's like Lensing Corporation branded. Their lyocell is Tencel. So you'll often see it used interchangeably, but it's essentially the same thing. Although I should say that Lensing has very strict sustainability standards, so they're amazing. So that's like pretty much my favorite fabric because it's so versatile. I love straight up 100% lyocell because it just has this amazing like fluid drape. I know you both sew with it, and it is... I'm sure you agree. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. I love lyocell blended with things because lyocell is a rayon, basically the main difference is lyocell is produced in a circular fashion, whereas viscose production, you have carbon disulfide that's released by the process. Lyocell is a different organic solvent that's used, which is able to be reused. So that's essentially the difference. But yeah, it's just so versatile, and it can be blended with linen to give linen this really beautiful drape. It can be blended with cotton to give cotton a bit of a drape. You can find, we used to carry like a 100% lyocell knit that I loved because it kind of is just super, I'm actually wearing it right now. It's just super drapey and light. And yeah, it's definitely my favorite.
That's fair. I think it's a favorite for a lot of people out there right now. Mm-hmm. I like that it's become so popular in the last few years because it is so versatile.
Yeah.
It's kind of tricky to care for it is the only thing. And I think why people sometimes are annoyed with it. And you can't just blast it on high heat on an iron. And it does wrinkle. So there are some downsides, but I think it's worth it.
Yeah. I mean, with the wrinkling, it's funny because we do get a lot of questions at Blackbird. Like, what do you carry that doesn't wrinkle? And there's really are not very many fabrics out there that don't wrinkle. I mean, knits might wrinkle a little bit less. Poly obviously doesn't wrinkle. Yeah. But other than that, like, everything wrinkles.
Yeah.
Everything wrinkles. It's just a look. Go with the look.
Yeah. Exactly.
I want to write like a kid's picture book, like the Everybody Poops book, but everything wrinkles.
Yeah. Just set those expectations early.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God. I would buy that. I would buy that in a minute for myself, just to remind myself that it's okay.
It's going to be okay. How has Matchpoint evolved over the last few years since you started it? We talked a lot about what you sell and everything, but how have things changed since you began? And also, where are you headed next?
I don't know if a lot of people know this, but it's just run in my apartment and it's just me, even though I answer emails like we, because it sounds more official and businesslike. But so it's still just me, still running it out of the weird warehouse at the back of my house. But I'm so proud with how like our community has grown and how kind of we've grown our stock. And I'm really excited to spend more of next year kind of doing offline activations and activities. I'm so excited about this fabric swap. And if people are into it, I'd like to make it like a maybe happen every 3 or 4 times a year. And it's a good way for people to kind of access some of the Matchpoint fabrics that they may not be able to buy regularly, because I understand that sustainable fabrics can be quite expensive for many people. So I'll be bringing like a lot of remnants to the fabric swap and just giving them away. And yeah, in the future, I would love to just kind of become more of a resource for education around sustainable textiles. And also, I would like to have a studio, and my husband would like me to have a studio as well.
I think that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. We would all enjoy that. More space for him so he can start beer making or whatever he wants to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because that's such a small activity.
I know, right? He's like, I need space.
I always joke with Sam because he does the miniature painting. I'm like, at least your hobby's really small. Everything about it is miniature.
Literally miniature.
Yeah, because I don't think we could handle it otherwise.
No. You need one big one and one little one in a partnership. That's how it works.
So right now, are all of your fabrics stored at your apartment, or do you have like overflow in some secret location? Nope.
I wish. Oh, that sounds so nice. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It's all here, baby.
Wow. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did that for the first few years, and it's totally doable, if not overwhelming.
It's overwhelming, for sure. It's also very dangerous, and I'm sure you found this too, Caroline. Like, you're bored on a Saturday night. You're like, I'm just going to go fabric shopping in my house.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's bad.
So where do you see yourself in like 5 years? What's the dream for you?
The dream would for sure be for Matchpoint to kind of have grown to a place where it can be my full-time job. So I do still have another job. I work as a copywriter part-time as well. So I would love to kind of move towards just owning the business full time, because it is definitely my passion project. yeah, and I just want to keep growing the stock, growing the space. And it would actually be really cool to be able to either offer pickup or to offer kind of some kind of storefront, because I think e-commerce, of course, is not the most sustainable option when you're flying goods around the world, of course. So it would be amazing to kind of be able to offer that. I would actually, I'm trying to look into doing something with bike couriers for local deliveries. So stay tuned for that. We'll see how that turns out.
Oh my gosh, that would be amazing.
Can you imagine, like, order fabric online and then a bike courier drops it?
I want it to be like, we have a Foodora in Vancouver. It's like bike delivery. Yeah. Food service, and you can watch the person like on a map like bike to your house with your food. I want that for fabric.
Yeah, it basically, that would be the dream.
Yeah,
so stay tuned.
Very cool. Well, I'm sure you're going to come up with all sorts of amazing things. And I mean, from our experience, it's definitely possible to run a successful business in the sewing industry. And I'd love to hear what your favorite part of running a business in the sewing world has been so far.
Probably it's a two-part answer, like just being so inspired by other mostly female-led businesses that are just succeeding and doing so well and doing it their own way. Like, both of you two have been such a huge inspiration for me and so many others. That's a huge just plus. And everyone is like so supportive also, and we all kind of help each other grow, and I think that's very cool. The other amazing part about running my own business is getting to do everything. So it's all just me. I did the whole website design. I do the writing. I source the fabric. I pack the orders. I take the photos. And that just gets me so juiced up. Like, I'm so pumped to, quote unquote, go into the office every day, which is my outdoor space. But it's just, it's really cool. And I hope that if you are thinking of opening a business, that you do it, because it's great.
Well, that was going to be my next question, is whether you had any advice for our listeners out there who want to take on something like an online fabric store, maybe selling sewing notions or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I think this is what I always tell people, and I always tell myself, is to start before you're 100% ready, because there's always going to be something that's holding you back. You know, the website's never going to be perfect. You're always... You're going to find a typo on your fabric description. You're not going to be the best photographer ever, but I think if you just get going, you'll be amazed by the momentum that occurs. And that's really what propels you forward and keeps you going. And I think also, like, don't get blinded by Instagram, because I mean, I work 70 hours a week. I have two jobs. Like, I think it can seem like I just do this fabric store full time and it's really easy, but I think it's a lot of hard work, and sometimes it can seem like everyone is just living this perfect life, completely supported by their sewing profits, but there's a lot of work that often goes on behind the scenes, and I think that's important to remember as well, that if you feel it challenging at first, just don't give up, because everyone went through that.
That's great advice. We want to talk about your style, because before you started Matchpoint, I followed you on Instagram. Your Instagram handle is Michelle of a Time. And I actually remember mentioning you on the podcast as somebody who's super inspiring to me. You have awesome personal style. So can we talk a little bit about that? Like, how would you describe your style?
First of all, that's so nice. Thank you. I remember when you mentioned me and I died. I was at the office and I was like so excited and just totally fangirling. So yes, very cool. Yeah, my personal style, I'm obsessed with style, and it's something I like work really hard at. So I've done a lot of kind of work around defining my personal style, and I kind of did the Curated Closet, which is a book. So I did that whole thing, and she gets you to define your style. So in three words. So I feel like my style is like playful minimalism with like structure. So I really gravitate towards a lot of oversized pieces. I do a lot of vintage shopping, so I like to pair my handmades with vintage a lot. I'm really inspired by Japanese fashion. So they use a lot of natural textiles as well, which works for me. So yeah.
Do you have any style icons? Like, where do you pull your inspiration from other than what you just mentioned, Japanese fashion?
Yeah. Yes, I have so many. My number one Instagram style icon right now is a woman named Virginia Calderon. Her Instagram handle is Chica de Oro. And she is just amazing because she just does these like beautiful oversized dresses and she always pairs them with Crocs. And I just think that she's a genius. So definitely check her out. In the sewing world right now, I'm obsessed with so many sewists. I could, again, this would be a 6-hour podcast. But recently, a woman named Alexis Bailey, her Instagram is The Real Alexis Bailey, is just killing it right now. And her photography is amazing. There's also someone named Jackie Sackell, and her Instagram is Jackie_Sackell. She does a lot of really cool like print matching and just very kind of high fashion sewing, which I'm really kind of into and constantly inspired by her. So those are my crushes right now.
Amazing. Well, I'll definitely have Sam link all of those in the show notes. Yay. I want to make sure I follow along as well. And how has your style changed over the years? Because you've started this business and gotten really into the sewing community and are focusing more on sustainability. So there's a lot of moving pieces. And I'm curious how your style has evolved to fit your lifestyle.
I think this whole kind of challenge I've set for myself to only use sustainable textiles in my stash has really changed my style in quite a huge way, because I'm using way more linens and way more Tencels, and this just gives everything a more kind of earthy, organic feel. So I've tried to lean into that kind of by pairing like, you know, linen culottes with maybe like a silky top I find at the thrift store, because that's kind of a way that you can play with textures. So you're not just like, sometimes I do like the, you know, like linen on linen, like kind of prison chic look, but sometimes you want something a little bit fancier. So I do like to mix in some thrift store pieces as well. But yeah, sustainability has really changed my style. And I think it's just like a fun style challenge to see how I can still feel like myself, but using fabrics that I feel good about.
And what about patterns? Do you have any go-to patterns that you're really enjoying right now?
I'm obsessed like with Japanese pattern books, because when I went to Japan, that was just my whole suitcase on the way home. I think it was pretty much like overweight with pattern books. So a few favorites. There's a series of Japanese pattern books called Kwa Kwa, like the French question. So those are amazing. I just love, they're such modern shapes and they all call for natural textiles. So you can use your organic cottons in your linens. And they're just really contemporary. And honestly, if you use the app Google Duo or Google Translate, and you do that thing where you hover your phone over and it translates, they're super easy to kind of manage. And a lot of them have diagrams too. And then anything by this woman named Asuka Hameda. She's another amazing Japanese pattern designer that just, she does these really bold, simple shapes that are perfect for beginner sewists.
Ooh, definitely going to check those out. I love oversized fashion. I love apron fashion, which yes, is popular in Japanese style as well. So, oh my gosh, I'm all over it.
Yes, it's my favorite.
So how much of your wardrobe is handmade, do you think?
I think it's probably 50% handmade, 50% vintage. I don't have any new, I think I have a pair of Everlane jeans, but other than that, I don't have any new clothes.
Wow.
And earlier you mentioned working 70 hours a week. How do you plan time to sew while doing that? Like, where do you find the time?
Trello definitely helps. Planning definitely helps. Having a husband who likes to cook dinner definitely helps. So I find that I'm often just like stealing time in between activities. And I do like to sort of break out my sewing tasks into like little bite-sized chunks. So if I tell myself, okay, I only have half an hour, but I can get a zipper done in that time, I feel so much more accomplished. And I just feel good about what I can get done. And I don't feel guilty. And I don't feel, you know, depressed that I haven't sewn anything this week, if you just break it down like that. So I don't know, stuff does get done. I'm definitely not as prolific as I used to be, but I'm working on a couple things right now that I'm pretty excited about. So
prolific in other ways.
Yes. Yes, hopefully.
Well, Michelle, thank you so much for coming on the show. We've really enjoyed chatting with you today. Caroline, did you have another question?
No. Okay. No. I do. I have one more question to wrap up. I was wondering if you could offer our listeners some words of encouragement as we're going into October and everyone's going to be talking about sustainability. And I know we kind of touched on this, but I thought it would be nice to end off on that note of what are your thoughts about the sewing community and sustainability and kind of encouraging people out there to keep at it and keep that in their minds?
Oh, yeah, I would love to. I think it's so important to remember that we're all doing our best. And honestly, just by sewing our own clothes, we're so much further along than so many other people in this kind of sustainable fashion journey. So already that's just a huge pat on the back. And I know that there are many ways to be sustainable in this community. And there may be a lot of opinions about what you should do or what you shouldn't do, but always just kind of keep your own happiness in check and keep your own passions in check. And just remember that doing what you can is the first step towards an amazing lifelong journey towards sustainability. And it doesn't have to happen all at once. And you don't have to buy Tencel. You don't have to buy expensive organic linen. You can just swap some fabric with a friend or go through your stash or, just take a couple hours in the evening to research, bamboo. It's so overwhelming, but I think just doing a little bit or taking that first step is more than enough.
Thank you so much for that. We all need a little encouragement, and that was perfect. Thank you.
So before we wrap up, tell our listeners where they can find you online.
So you can find me on my personal account at Michelle of a Time on Instagram, and you can check out Matchpoint at matchpointfabric.com or on Instagram at matchpointfabric.
Awesome. And I hope our listeners are going to go check out your shop and both of those Instagram accounts. You really do inspire us, Michelle. Thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us today.
Thanks. It was so great to chat with you too. You're both such an inspiration to me.
Awesome. Aww,
thank you.
Bye.
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 This episode is sponsored by clothinglabelsforyou.com. When you've just created your favorite new garment, there's no finishing touch like adding a custom woven label.
ClothingLabelsForYou.com is based in Florida, USA. They create the special labels you've been looking for, everything from custom labels and hang tags to care labels and iron-on transfers. They offer low minimum orders, no setup fees, and free samples of their work.
Go to ClothingLabelsForYou.com, that's ClothingLabels, the number 4, and the letter U.com, to get in touch and create your custom labels today.
That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. You can find me, Helen, at helenscloset.ca and Caroline at blackbirdfabrics.com.
We're recording today in sunny Vancouver, Canada. It's a miracle that it's sunny. It was supposed to be rainy. You can get in touch with us and get links for everything we talked about in this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
That's your definition of a miracle? The weather?
Yeah.
If you're loving the show and you want to help us out, you can support us on Patreon. We're a lot more catty on Patreon. Contribute $5 or more a month and you'll get access to our bonus episode feed. Go to patreon.com/lovetosew for more info.
Thank you to our amazing podcast team, Sam Humphrey and Melanie Brister. And thank you all so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Sorry about the miracle thing. That was rude.
That's okay. I'm used to it.